Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, the Lakers are halfway through the season. 41 games down, 41 to go. Let's hand out some awards.
Feels like a threat.
It's not supposed to be, but I could see how you would feel that way. We'll hand out some first season awards. Plus, LeBron James had some very interesting comments after Sunday's loss about the impending return of Anthony Davis. We'll do all of that next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. Appreciate you finding this show wherever you find your podcasts, whenever you find them, whether it's the wee hours of the morning or later in the day during your commute, whatever it might be. Also, try to make another Locked On show your second listen, Locked On NBA, maybe Locked On Fantasy, whatever it is that you're focused on. Andy, I could see how you would feel that way. 41 games to go. If you're an optimist, it's like 41 games. Like, there's plenty of time. If you're a pessimist, it's like, oh my God. And then if you're just sort of maybe somebody with empathy, you'd be like, and they can be quietly, you know, shot outside at the back, outside the barn after 41 more.
Whatever. I mean, that's certainly darker than where I was going. I mean, I still think there is plenty of time, assuming Anthony Davis gets back reasonably on schedule and everybody else stays in the lineup. I do think there is time to build towards something, because I do think this team, as much as the steps have at times felt two forward, one back, I think of over like the last 3 weeks, there's been more steps forward than backwards. Mm-hmm. It just has not been an easy ride over 41 games. It has been a very frustrating ride over 41 games, and it has not always been, aside from this show, obviously, the most entertaining 41 games possible. Were it not for this show, Brian, I would say this season would be completely unwatchable. So you're welcome, everyone.
Yes, America.
Yeah.
Look, if
no,
anybody...
nay, Brian, the world. The Lakers are a global brand.
That is
therefore
true.
We are global ambassadors, frankly, global saviors.
I think that is
you're welcome.
Absolutely true. And look, if you're looking for two guys who are able to find entertainment in bad Lakers basketball, you are looking at the right people, because Andy and I, for people who don't know, we were the pre- and post-game hosts during the worst seasons in Lakers history between the 2010 championship and when LeBron arrived. So we got that stretch. That was
us. A lot of Ronnie Price in those days.
Yeah. Well, hey, guys. Let's focus on Vander Blue again for another week. We're good at that. It was interesting to hear LeBron talk, you know, obviously this 41 game milestone or signed milepost or whatever it is prompts a lot of questions. Milepost, mile marker, sign post marker. Allow myself to introduce myself. It's a natural thing to be asked about, natural thing to write about. You're halfway through the season. And so LeBron was asked about, you know, where he thought things stood and where he thought it wasn't that bad, where he thought things were with the team going forward after 41 games. And, you know, it's been so hard to get a handle on where the Lakers are, that he settled on a couple things. You know, I think that we have finally found an identity. This is how we're going to play over the last couple of weeks. I think, Andy, that is definitely true. Like, this is, they figured out what they're going to be going forward, and that's important.
Yeah. I mean, it is the better version of this team on balance in terms of what they're looking to construct. It's what you and I know definitely I thought they should have been leaning into in the first place. You know, when they brought in DeAndre Jordan, the biggest fear that you and I had wasn't even so much the idea of, you know, Jordan getting minutes, although, you know, neither one of us was necessarily geared up for the idea of
playing
25. I was
a little fearful of that.
Yeah. Right. But the overarching concern I had with DeAndre Jordan being brought in on top of Dwight Howard was that it was going to lead to them not playing the best version of themselves, which really is Anthony Davis at center. And some of this decision, I think, has been made by the fact that neither Dwight nor especially DeAndre has been particularly effective anyway. So those guys have kind of forced Frank Vogel's hand anyway, but it's the best version of this team to begin with.
The other thing that LeBron was talked about, though, in terms of understanding who the Lakers are and how, you know, they can proceed going forward and whether or not they, he knows enough to know what kind of team they are, is the return of Anthony Davis. And, you know, LeBron said, like, this, obviously we get better when AD returns, but like, we don't quite know what it is, like, because he hasn't been here, particularly since they've leaned 100% into this idea of, we're going small. This is going to be our identity. We've spent, obviously, Andy, a ton of time talking about AD, talking about the center position. And it's not going to be radically different necessarily. He's played more center this year than last year, than in the year before. But I do wonder if 100% Anthony Davis, you are the starting center of this team. That's it.
Save Nikola Jokic matchups.
I'm not even sure. Maybe. I don't think so. I actually think the Lakers are going to start Davis, should start Davis against the classic big centers going forward. Anthony Davis should start against everybody at the five once he's back.
They very well do that. I hope they do.
Only
potential possibility for something else. That's it.
Sure. Given how important it is that Davis comes back and elevates in the way that we've been talking about, you know, it's not good enough for him to be the 14th best player in the NBA. He needs to be a top five-ish guy. Does having this sort of thing defined and ending the Kabuki theater and ending the questions and all that kind of stuff, do you think that makes a difference? You know, can that help get more from Davis going forward, this full lean in into the identity of a small team, you know, relatively smaller than they were, no classic center, playing with the style that they're looking at? Because it's a style that favors how he plays. It should,
I mean,
at least.
The answer to that question is, how much does he not want to do it? If this is something that has to become kind of a, I don't know, like a guiding motivational thing, like, you know, just something where you're almost cornering Anthony Davis into a position where he has no force, no option other than just to buy into it, then I suppose, yeah, it could be helpful. If Anthony Davis is already there, then all it does is just provide clarity for him. And it just gives him more continuity and just more reps doing the thing that they've been building towards since he's been gone anyway. But I mean, to me, that answer really has to do with Anthony Davis's buy-in with it. If there's any resistance towards it, then I guess it could. I mean, maybe it guilts him into feeling like he has to, if nothing else. I mean, look, shame can be a very powerful force in your life, in the workplace, all that sort of stuff. But if he's bought in, then I think it's just really solidifying what they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, the person really to ask is AD.
Yeah, and we won't get access to him for a little bit. But, like, you know, he talked about Russ, and LeBron did. And the idea that when they're at their best, they are pushing pace, they are playing quickly. And I think that's more or less true. You know, look, AD on the break is terrifying. Like, you know, that is a thing that scares the crap out of other defenses. In theory, a spread floor where he can use, you know, put the ball on the floor comfortably, not necessarily attract double teams as quickly or make them pay. If you don't, like, the way they're playing right now really is set up for AD to thrive. And they're going to need it because they're only going to get 25-ish games of that, you know, 30 games or whatever it might be. It seems that way, at least. I kind of hope we'll get to some awards here in a second. I kind of hope that Davis has been paying attention to the commentary really about how he's played this year, because an angry AD, certainly going into the bubble with a lot to prove, turned into a thing that was very beneficial for the Lakers, and could definitely do that again, because he and LeBron are both going to receive some flack, but AD more so because his season has been more disappointing than LeBron's, assuming LeBron keeps up what he's been doing, which has just been absurdly incredible over the last, couple of weeks. All right. So the first half, Andy, as we've discussed, is over. We've got some awards to hand out over for the first 41 games. We will do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online wants to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue the march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. It's a new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website. To sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code Locked On to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest, easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the games start.
All right.
Yeah. Occasionally, Brian, you get that tickle in your throat while you're doing a read, and you're like three quarters of the way through. You're like, damn it, I'm powering through this.
I am going to land this plane. I don't know how.
Yeah. It might be a fiery explosion where only the cockpit survives and I get out.
But that's fine.
Damn it, that's what's going
to
happen.
We need to find someone who can fly this plane and didn't have fish for dinner. Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, let's hand out some awards. I mean, overall, I think we could agree that, if you were assigning a letter grade for the Lakers, there are all kinds of caveats and a lot of things feel like an incomplete or whatever it might be. If I'm giving the Lakers a letter grade for the first half relative to expectations, it's like a C minus D plus kind of thing for me.
Something
I think
like
C
that.
Minus feels like grading on a curve.
I was going to say it depends on as a teacher. Professor, how empathetic are you?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a D. I'm not gonna give him a straight F, but like D something, right?
Yeah, it's in that range.
And certain things are obviously
the Lakers are really nervous if it's a pass, no pass situation,
right? If it is, they're fine. I mean, technically, they're still passing, but if it's a letter grade that it's going to apply to their GPA, they've got problems. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to look at some sort of individual categories and stuff like that. Obviously, your MVP for this team is LeBron James. It's not that hard to figure that stuff out. And there's a giant muddle for everything behind it, which is kind of part of the problem. Do you want to do the optimistic category first or the pessimistic one?
Let's start optimistic.
All right. What is your who is your surprise of the year? And meaning in a good way.
Austin Reaves. Mm-hmm. I mean, just he is nobody. Nobody expected him to become a player that would even crack this rotation, much less somebody that you would actually prefer to play after 41 games. Like you want a spot for him in the rotation. You and I have debated offline at times about the importance of Austin Reaves and just how big of an impact he's actually having. Like I think there's occasionally times where because he has become extremely popular among Laker fans and basketball Twitter in general, and I think because he's such a really pleasant, fun story and an easy guy to root for, and the numbers absolutely love him, I think sometimes he becomes easy to forget a little bit of context with them, or you don't even want to look deeper because
essentially what you're saying is his impact is overrated. But like, why? I
think at times he can be the beneficiary of playing a lot with LeBron, and when you play a lot with LeBron, you're going to have a lot of benefit with that.
Okay, but a lot of guys have played with LeBron and don't have nearly the net rating, for example, that Austin Reaves.
But a lot of those guys also play in different spots where, like for example, the starting lineup that's been all over the place and things like that. Again, I think he should be playing. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's just a meme or anything like that. Like I think he is a legit rotation player. I'm glad the Lakers found him. It's a credit to their scouting department. They had him earmarked as somebody that could fall out of the draft. And if he does, let's grab this guy. It's my understanding there were conversations with his agent and stuff like that. He's great. I'm glad he is with this team. To whatever degree you think he's been impactful or not, there's no question he has been impactful. And again, it's a big surprise and a very big pleasant surprise.
So, okay. I mean, I will say that I think he's been much more impactful than you, like legitimately, not just the radiation of LeBron, and I what he is a thing this team really needs. He is arguably their best two-way supporting guy in terms of, you know, the ability to fit in the offense and help with the offense and also play solid defense in the way that they want to. I mean, it is fun.
Teams attack
him in part because he looks like he was, you know, airlifted from 1963 onto the court, and they think they can because he looks like Austin Reeves and he's the sort of, you know, pasty, you know, soft looking white guy. They think they can, and you know, it's fun that stuff I think will change to people, teams trying to sort of punk him one-on-one and all those things going forward. But in terms of making the right rotation, being able to stay in front of guys and drawing charges and doing it, he makes very few mistakes defensively, like Agreed. The kind of mistakes that break your defense down. Offensively, I'm not saying he's a go-to scorer by any stretch of the imagination, although he is, you know, in the Caruso comparisons, for example, which are both lazy and also kind of appropriate.
Yeah.
The thing that he does offensively better, much better than Alex Caruso did, certainly at this point in his NBA career, he will take the open shot happily.
Yes.
He will put the ball on the floor. He will go, you know, to the basket. But more importantly, he always makes the correct extra pass. He is, there was a play against Memphis where, you know, a couple plays against Memphis where you could just see him knowing, okay, I'm going to get the ball. The ball's going to swing to me. And I know exactly where it's going to go when it gets to me. And he's doing that thing where you can see it two or three, you know, passes ahead. That sort of thing for an offense that frequently gets bogged down and all that is very important. He really is a kind of bridge glue player in that offense that I think is really, really impactful. So I will give more credence to numbers than I think you will.
Well, let me add really quickly.
I just don't agree.
Well, let me also add a little bit quickly. It's not just that he plays a lot with LeBron. He typically plays with the best players on this team and some of the most experienced, some of the more dynamic, which allows him to have a very, I think, useful defined role, but also he is often asked to do less in terms of dynamic stuff than some other guys on this team. The stuff that he does very well, and it's important in certain respects because of who surrounds him. I think sometimes it's easier. Sometimes, again, defensive principles, things like that. But again, he's important.
We don't have to agree on Austin Reeves. I mean, if you're looking for other candidates here, I thought about Malik Monk, but the reason I didn't go with Monk, just because like what we're seeing now was within the range of like reasonable possibilities that I thought. I was like, there was certainly in my mind a good chance that Monk could really thrive because he's very showed himself to be a very talented offensive player in Charlotte. The defense was a question. He's done better at that here. I just thought the range on him also included, man, if he doesn't play well quickly, he could get benched. And so he is at near the upper end of what I hoped he could be, but it's also within that range. Another candidate for this is Avery Bradley. I think on two levels, first of all, you didn't expect him to be on the team at all. But then, you know, the improvement that he has shown legitimately from the beginning of the season to where he is now, Sunday notwithstanding, didn't play a great game, has changed the view of many Bradley critics, including me, in terms of his viability and whether or not they really want to or need to guarantee him, for example, for the rest of the season.
Me as well.
So I mean, those are some pleasant surprises, I think, for the Lakers. Let's though get into, Andy, a longer list, a list with so many options, the list of the biggest disappointment for the Lakers. Let's do that though next. Unfortunately, the list of surprises, pleasant surprises, is a little shorter. We mentioned a few there. You know, you could even add LeBron, who's putting up numbers at a level that he hasn't really since his Miami days, which at age 37 is kind of impressive, even if you expect LeBron to be good. The longer list of options really comes with disappointments. Many to choose from. Where did you go for the biggest first half disappointment for this team?
Well, it's interesting. Before I even get to my response, I know a lot of people would answer Russell Westbrook, and I understand where they would be coming from. And when you think about everything that comes with Westbrook, the impact of trading for him, what they gave up to bring him in, not signing Alex Caruso because of luxury tax implications linked directly to Russell Westbrook and, you know, the erratic nature at times of his play, all of that stuff is legitimate. And as much as you and I have maintained that Russ has been, I think, on balance better than he's sometimes given credit, and that, you know, there's a perception issue with him that makes him a lightning rod and he was unpopular as an acquisition to begin with, all that stuff matters. I just ultimately feel like Russell Westbrook has largely been Russell Westbrook, and there are areas where he could be better that are within his control. I think most notably defensive awareness. Mm-hmm. He still has largely been Russell Westbrook, and he hasn't unfortunately been better than I thought he would be. And full disclosure, I was not in favor of this trade. I was very on record of not liking this trade when it was just a rumor. But nonetheless, he has not really been any worse than I expected. Would you agree with that before we get into anybody
he's
else?
He's been a little worse. He is a little bit, but I also didn't think he'd get off to a particularly fast start because that's been his track record for the last couple of years. The fit was always going to be a problem and a difficult thing to work through. But yeah, broadly, I agree with you. I don't think he's been as bad as it's not his fault that the Lakers acquired him.
You know, it is a little bit. He asked.
I mean, right. But it's, you know, my children ask for things all the time. Sure. I don't have to say yes.
I'm just saying he was not sucker punched by this. No, he was not an innocent bystander.
My daughter would eat nothing but Pop-Tarts if we let her. I mean, we let her eat too many Pop-Tarts as it is.
Russ is also not a 3-year-old though.
Some people
only in post-game pressers.
Right. I don't think his play has been bad enough relative to expectations. I also had Bazemore. I'm curious if we have this basically the same reasoning. Go ahead.
My response was Kent Bazemore. Just ultimately, I thought he was going to be an essential part of this rotation, you know, for maintaining defensive integrity, versatility, the ability to bridge big and small, take some defensive burden off LeBron. Like, I thought he would end up a pretty big bargain. And, mm-hmm. you know, I maybe not like at the level that I thought he would be like a decade ago when I thought the Lakers should have retained him after that midseason deal, but like important, he is, to put it mildly, Brian, buried. He is at best their 12th man. And that's being generous. Like, there are 11 guys counting eventually Kendrick Nunn definitively ahead of him in the rotation. And from there, it's like, okay, if you want to be kind to Bazemore, maybe you say, I'm not putting Stanley Johnson there yet because he hasn't been formally signed for the rest of the season. Or it's like, well, I don't know exactly where Wayne Ellington fits into all this. So again, he is at best their 12th man. And that is really, really looking to be kind to Kent Bazemore. I was way dead ass wrong with this.
And yeah, our reasoning here is exactly the same. I talked about Westbrook. Relative to expectations, Russ has not played. His actual play has really not been, it's been a little bit disappointing. And I think it's been a little bit worse than what I hoped, but it has not been like off the grid. Like, Kent Bazemore does not play. And I don't know if it's completely fair. You know, he wasn't great. He had some decent moments early, and then LeBron got hurt and the whole thing kind of went off the rails. And maybe he's being unfairly penalized. Maybe he should be back in the rotation, whatever it might be, but he's not, and he's not coming back. And what's amazing about it is like all that stuff you talked about, two-way defensive play, a credible ability to hit the three-pointer and all that stuff. Honestly, he has been replaced by Austin Reeves. I mean, that's where a lot of those things have come from.
Deservedly. Reeves.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Like, Austin Reeves has filled the role that in a lot of ways we expected Bazemore to play. I think Ariza is trying to work his way into form to pick up some of that. I give him the benefit of the doubt because he hasn't been able to play. It's interesting. We got a comment on the YouTube channel, Locked On Lakers on YouTube, from somebody who's kind of a Russ defender, and pointed out that, you know, he used the example of Marcus Aldridge and some of the politics when he went to San Antonio. They never really liked him there. Why? Because he wasn't a Spur. He wasn't a, you know, Spur for life. He was an outsider and all that kind of
By
stuff.
By they, you mean Spurs fans, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't pay attention that much to how like popular LaMarcus Aldridge was in San Antonio.
I mean, remember he and Pop had issues. They had ironed out, and they came out.
But again, I'm yes anding through this regardless. The idea we talked about, like Russ represents a lot of stuff with the Lakers that are extraneous to how he's actually playing, and so this is that guy's point, like. Is he being blamed for stuff that really isn't his fault? He's not a true Laker. He's sort of the scapegoat for it. But meanwhile, he points to Carmelo Anthony, who has legitimately not played well over the last month. Trevor Ariza, who's just barely played. Dwight Howard and DeAndre Jordan. You could throw Kent Bazemore in here. All of these guys were expected to do some important things to one degree or another. Is it possible, he's saying, that Russ is getting too much blame that really should be focused on these supporting characters who are not performing the way that has been expected? Is Russ being blamed for the failures that are around the rest of the roster? Is sort of this guy's point. He says, yes. I don't agree, but it's an interesting question.
I mean, to quote our friend Darius Soriano, at the Laker Film Room podcast, yes and no. Mm-hmm. I mean, Russ is, like I said earlier, a polarizing lightning rod player, and Russ is not somebody that necessarily goes out of his way to ingratiate. Like, he is not somebody that's going to look to please you through personality. And you can also make an argument that Russ's importance was much greater than all those guys. So combined. How Russ plays is more important than how any of those other guys that you named earlier played. But if you're asking me, is Russ holding up his end of the bargain more than those other guys, other than maybe Melo, the answer is yes. So, I mean, both of those things can be true at the same time.
Right. And it's just that the relative success and failure of the team is much more dictated by Russ than it is those other guys. And that's why I do think there is an element to that, though. He is an outsider. He is, an avatar for a very unpopular trade, both conceptually and for the literal guy that they brought in. He's going to catch a lot of that anger, really for, like you say, often just doing exactly what you would expect Russell Westbrook to do. Well,
but I guess for a lot of people, he's going to really piss you off because it's like, God damn it. This is exactly why I said this trade was stupid. And now he's doing the things. If I can figure this out from my damn living room, why can't Rob Pelinka or LeBron James or Anthony Davis or Jeannie Buss ultimately figure this out? Because they're supposed to be the experts, not me, in a different industry.
the degree of difficulty for this was off the charts. When it's not quite, doing a bicycle kick in soccer when like a simple tap in would do. instead of hitting your 6-foot putt to win your skins game on 18, with the blade of your putter, you get down and hit it like a pool cue. It's like, you can still make the putt, but is that the best way to do it? Then none of that is Russell Westbrook's fault. Tomorrow, Andy, we will come back and do some of our, we'll do some predictions for the second half, kind of looking back on the first half today. Tomorrow, Wednesday's show will be all about looking forward to the second half with some predictions. So we appreciate everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day. Reminder, do subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube, all kinds of breaking news. And on off days like this one, you generally will get the podcast access to it a little bit earlier if you're subscribed to YouTube. So thanks to everybody. We'll be back on Wednesday.